This is like making a light bulb go off in my head, because how many times have I been in school and they're like, what's the rhyme scheme? What's this? What's that? And I could have been like, not every poem has a rhyme scheme. Like, yeah. I'm so like, yeah. like mad, but like yeah. validated at the yeah. same time.
Feel validated in this. All right, and welcome to the Book Jar Podcast, where both me, Marissa, and my best friend, Megan, discuss book-related news and topics on a bi-weekly basis. How are you today, Megan?
I'm doing great.
Are you laughing at me because I had to record the intro four times?
It's like the first time you weren't reading it, so you did like another podcast intro, and then when you started reading it, then you messed up on words. So I messed up specifically on
the last word.
Yeah, so you had to restart it. And, you know, I don't know what the answer is for you. But
it's okay. it's really just sometimes it's going to happen. Sometimes you get it in one, sometimes you get it in five.
And it is what it is.
It is what it is.
That is podcasting.
That is podcasting. But how, you heard it here first.
How are you doing now?
Doing okay. Yeah. How has your reading been?
Reading's been good. Okay. I guess. I mean,
I guess. Maybe, kind of.
Yeah. Like, I was able to get through four books. Two of them were poetry books.
Right.
And two of them were romance books. So I was keeping it pretty chill this past month. What about you?
I got through four books as well.
Would you look at that?
So I actually don't remember if I don't think I had finished Lord of Chaos when we last talked. I think we had almost finished Lord of Chaos, which is the sixth book in The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. I have a whole podcast dedicated to that series. So if you want to check out thoughts there, I will say the last 30 pages of that book gaslit me into thinking that the whole thing was as good as the last 30 pages. Robert Jordan really does have a crazy ability to nail the ending, and it makes you kind of forget everything else that you didn't like about the book. So if you're looking to read 970 pages and then be a little bit frustrated, and then 30 pages that completely rock your world, boy, do I have the series for you. So that was definitely that one. There's a very famous chapter called Do My Wells, in which there is a large battle. I won't talk directly about what happens because obviously that's spoilers, but it really did live up to the hype. Okay. I was thoroughly impressed with that. I also read a Meg Cabot novel.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, so that was a flashback to my teenage years when I really was a Meg Cabot stan. So it was called Enchanted to Meet You, which is a Witches of West Harbor novel. I will say, having grown up, I can recognize that Meg Cabot, this is an adult book. Okay. So it's a romance and there is a little bit of spice in it. It's not that heavy at all, but it still read a lot like her young adult work. Mm. So it kind of meant like the content of it was adult, but the writing quality personally I felt was more young adult. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't know if she shifted really into the adult writing mindset thoroughly enough, because she's written so many young adult books.
Was this a newer book or was this around the same time as
This was published in 2023.
Oh, interesting.
She has written adult books before that. I haven't read them, but yeah, I think she is perfect for the ages between like 14 and 19.
Yeah.
And then, but it was still fun. I had fun because it felt nostalgic, but I wouldn't say it was something I would recommend to anyone else unless you were a Meg Cabot fan.
That's
and
fair.
Then it was kind of worth it. Mm-hmm. And then I read All of Us Villains.
Oh, what'd you think?
I really liked the first one.
Okay.
I'm about a quarter of the way into the second one and I feel like I hit a slump.
Okay.
Which is weird because there's a lot of things happening, but it almost feels like it's just constantly things are happening and I'm like exhausted with it. Mm-hmm. The pacing of the whole series feels a little bit off. I almost wonder, because it's such a short time in real, well, it's not really a super short time in real life, but it doesn't feel like it really should have been two books.
Yeah, I could see that. Plus, it's hard because it's like it's going between different perspectives a lot. Yeah. And, like, I know for me, I like was enjoying some perspectives more than others. So I'd be like, okay, I just have to like get through this part to get to the one that I really want to be a part of. And then like each person is like going through different things. Like, you know, like it's just, like I get where you're coming from.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like a separate book. It feels like a continuation.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is a little bit of me also having, I'm reading The Wheel of Time and it's 1,000 pages, 600 to 1,000 pages each book. Mm-hmm. So when I get into a book where I feel like, I'm like, oh, you could have just put this all in the same book. It would have been 1,000 pages, but I would have read it. You
didn't try hard
enough. So maybe that's just a little bit of that coming into play, but I felt like I lost a little bit of the joy of it.
Yeah.
But I will say the first one was really well done, and I still am really excited to finish it. I just hit kind of a slump with reading it, so I haven't finished the second one yet.
That's fair.
And then the last book, I know this one's on your list too, was Talon by Julie Kagawa, and this was for our 2 a.m. book club. I will say I don't think I was, I'm not the intended age group for this. I did have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about, as you know, shape-shifting dragons who are just super hot.
Yeah. Hot and talented.
Hot and talented and ready to fall in love.
Yeah.
I did like the premise. I said this in our book club discussion, but I really wish I had found this when I was like between 14 and 17, because I would have absolutely devoured this whole series. Whereas I have been reading a lot of adult fantasy, specifically The Wheel of Time, and I think that has affected, you know, I wasn't ready to go to a young adult book, and I just had to because of our book club, so I think that affected the enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
But I will say, if you want a fun read and you love the idea of just really hot dragons, I don't think it's not worth a read.
Yeah. It's could be for you.
Could be for you.
I mean, I gotta correct you on that because I technically didn't finish it.
Oh, you didn't?
Yeah,
I forgot that.
Yeah, so like,
so you read 4.95 books.
Yeah, like I'm close to finishing it. It's kind of the same thing as I mentioned in our book club. It was like, I read it after like a really heavy memoir.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like not the vibe for me in that moment.
Yeah, it was too opposite.
Yeah, so it's still on my, like, currently reading. I might move it into a DNF for now.
And just see if you go back to it.
Yeah, and just see, like, if when I'm back in the mood to read that kind of book, to do it. So,
yeah.
I don't know, something to keep in mind for people out there if they are looking for that. I personally just needed to be in the right state of mind.
That was it. That was it. Tell me about yours.
Okay, so I'll start with our the romance books. So I don't know why, but I was just...
You were just feeling it.
Feeling the romance. The first one I read was This Spells Love by Kate Robb. And this one was super cute because it was about this girl. She had lives in her current life. She has this best guy friend that she met the night that she met her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets dumped by this boyfriend. And then, you know, has a drunken night. She has this quirky aunt who's we have this book and there's just a spell in it about, you know, heartbreak or whatever.
whatever
that means. So she ends up going through with playing around, messing around, not thinking much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it actually changes her course of life because she ends up actually not in this alternate reality, without giving too much away, ended up not meeting her ex-boyfriend. So it's really interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's interesting how it plays out and how that affects her relationship with her best friend, with her sister, her aunt.
The rippling effect
of it. And her life. So I really enjoyed how the author explored that. It was actually really well done. And even when I can't say that because it's going to spoil. So you'll just have to read.
When that one thing happened.
Yeah, that happened. It was good. Anyways, read if you're curious. But it does have some spice in it. It's that friends to lovers tropes in it. And I really liked the main character. I thought she was super lovable and fun and
nice.
Everything. So
we love a good main character.
So that was good. Then the second one was Plot Twist by Aaron LaRosa. So, little backstory on this. For whatever reason, I have it in my mind that I want a romance novel with like a ceramist or something.
You want the ghost scene.
Basically, which, yeah. Like, but I want like the whole book to be like focused on it, not just like a scene. So like,
that's a very specific.
It's very specific, and it's, you can't Google it. So I was like,
if anyone has the answer for Megan, please join our Discord and help her out.
Still looking, but I will say I picked this one up.
Okay.
Because the back said something about a kiln.
Okay.
Which, you know, is what you fire up your clay pots. If,
right.
For all those out there who are, you know,
into pottery.
Into pottery. And I was like, oh, could this be it?
Could I have found it?
Could I have found it? And it was cute. And there was some pottery stuff in it. There was a ghost scene, but not like as intimate, I found, as like the ghost scene.
Right.
It was like, it was just like, I don't know. It was like a couple paragraphs, and then nothing really else exciting happens with it.
So it came close, but no cigar.
Yeah. So anyways, still out looking for the perfect pottery, okay, yeah, romance.
Somebody ask somebody else. Get your friends. Yeah. Get your book friends on this.
We need to put this out.
We need
into the internet. You, like someone out there.
You need to put this on Instagram.
I've done it. I've put it on Threads. I put it on.
We got to put our resources out for this. So if you have book-ish friends, which I know you do, don't lie to me.
Yeah,
just ask them to ask their friend. We got to be able to find the right book for you.
Share the post. Do all the things, because
I'm actually really,
it's out there.
I'm invested in finding the right book.
Like, and this is the only reason that I'm probably gonna just read romance from now on, is to find this.
Also, shout out to thing. When we had our Not Safe for Work episode and you said, I'm going to just like take a whole year and not read romance, when actually it gave you the romance bug.
It did. I had like a couple month break, and then I was like,
you were like, wait, but that was kind of fun though.
That was fun. But I realized I'm not like a really dark romance. Like,
no, you need the,
I like the fluffy, the light stuff. Yeah.
Happy. Yeah, fluffy stuff.
Like happy ending, all that good stuff. So,
which is funny because you read mystery, so you'd think you'd maybe be okay with a little bit of the darker stuff, but
you know what? I guess not. It's not for me. But
everybody's got their own thing.
It is, exactly. So yeah, those were fun. And then the poetry books I read for today's
prepping for
today's topic. Yeah. So I read End Yet by Kate Bear. And I read Spawn by Marie-Andre Gill, which is translated from French, and it's a Canadian author. And honestly, that's all I'm going to say about it, because today
we're going to talk about it.
Poetry and all that.
I don't have the little slip of paper, which I usually have, so I can reread the question. So I don't remember the exact wording of it, mm-hmm. but it was like something about, what are your top tips for getting into poetry?
Yeah.
So I took this as Marissa's poetry 101 course.
Yeah, like you, it's not like you were just sitting prior to recording this writing notes or anything.
Yeah, I don't have a whole essay written about
what
you should do to get into poetry. I feel like this is, Marissa is the professor teaching the class, and you were my first student ever who I brought back as like a success case. I was like, look it, I did it. She likes poetry now.
And now you're going to have a bunch of other listeners who are into it.
So I find poetry is an interesting topic, because you have a lot of people who have, I will say, been scarred by school is maybe the right way to say it.
Yeah.
And you also have a lot of people who just think that, one, they're not, quote, smart enough, thoughtful enough, artistic enough, et cetera, mm-hmm. something enough to understand poetry. You also have the people who have maybe not thought too much about it, but really do hate it because of school.
Yeah.
And avoid it at every cost because of that. Whether that's a conscious thought or not, it's just, I don't like poetry and I never will.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other part of it is that poetry, like a lot of art forms, is very intimidating for a couple reasons. One, there's the people who get it. And so that can be an intimidating conversation to try and enter, because
yeah,
it's very vulnerable to say, I don't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard thing for a lot of people to say. And that's fair. I mean, I don't love when I'm on the outside. That's human nature to not love that feeling.
Yeah.
And you want to be for sure. in on it. And when you don't feel in on it, it can be a little bit scary to ask questions. And I find that poetry is like the epitome of that for mm-hmm. a lot of people. So I have a lot of notes and I have a lot of things that I want to go through. Yeah. And I'm just going to go. And I hope you just interrupt me constantly.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. I'll be a little bit on the sides here for this episode. And but I
if
will.
If I may, ask me questions.
Okay.
Because I feel like whatever you're thinking, somebody who wants to get in poetry mm-hmm. is probably also thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I may not have thought of. So let's start with everything I think you need to know about poetry.
Okay.
And short form. So there's 3 points here that I want you to know about poetry before I get into talking about how to read it. So poetry is a highly variable form and it encompasses a variety of styles, themes, and forms. So I think that's also what's really intimidating about poetry is you can pick up one poem and it be so hard to get into mm-hmm. and so frustrating. And you can pick up another poem and it's literally 2 lines.
Well, I think that's what I noticed with the 3 poetry books that I've read.
If I may
interject here. Yeah, like even within the poetry, it's like one book itself, it's so different.
Yeah, there's
and
a lot
then
of
obviously
variance.
Between the poets themselves, it's just like so different. And like I could tell with like Spawn, for instance, I did not enjoy that one as much as the others 2 because of how it was written. Like, so yeah.
So poetry is also a little bit hard to define specifically because it's expanded as a form to include a lot of things. So, and it's also a little bit different for everyone. Mm-hmm. You'll get people who will argue that certain types of poetry aren't real poetry and that sort of thing. I'm not one of those people, but you will get that conversation. Mm-hmm. So it can be very intimidating to try to enter it because you're like, I don't really know what this means. And nobody really wants to give me the same answer.
Yeah. And I think that's what I struggled with. It was like, okay, like, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. What even is poetry?
Yeah. What do you mean? Like, is like the spine of a book, like the title of a book poetry? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can make the argument personally for me.
Yeah.
So I have a pretty open definition of it. And it is any piece of writing that encompasses some sort of speech or song that uses some form or structure to get a specific theme across. That's what I would define poetry as.
So it's like really heavy on theme is what you're saying.
So you are writing something with the idea of getting some sort of message, theme, idea across. And you're not writing about it necessarily super directly.
Okay.
So you're using imagery. You're using maybe concrete images to talk about a non-concrete idea.
Mm-hmm.
Anything like that. But you can also be talking about very concrete things. And there might be some sort of lesson or story that you want to convey at the end. And poetry has been redefined over the ages as new poets have come in and shifted what has happened. Very real and more recent example of this, I would say, is like spoken word poetry,
mm-hmm.
which has really redefined certain types of poetry. And you will get academics who will say that that's not real poetry and all that. I mean, it's a type of poetry. You might not like it. You don't have to like it. I don't like every type of poetry.
Yeah.
But it is a type of poetry.
So if I wrote something and it just so happened to rhyme, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a poem if it doesn't have that theme being expressed through it.
Yeah, so that's actually one of my biggest pet peeves is when you're watching a show
and it rhymes.
Somebody rhymes and they're like, oh my god, I'm a poet. And I know it's a joke, so I shouldn't take it that seriously, but when they actually think poems have to rhyme,
mm-hmm.
ooh.
It's very, that was like ingrained in me as like a child.
Yeah, and I don't know where that's come from because a lot of very prolific poets don't rhyme. They don't mm-hmm. use rhyme schemes. That is actually a less common thing I find in
like
a lot of the poems I like.
All of that.
Yeah, haikus are a fantastic example of poems that don't rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
I have others coming up, but rhyme is not what makes a poem, but I'm going to get that in a second. So I will say, coming from the writer standpoint, what I think a lot of people may not know about poetry is writing poems often comes down to some sort of restriction as well. So you're trying to get across a theme, and generally poets restrict them in some sort of way. Or at least my favorite poets do. So maybe this is a little bit of a biased take. But a lot of poetic forms are very prescriptive in order to force you to go about your theme or your idea or whatever you're trying to convey in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you have a lot of different types of poetry. So haiku, for example, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, it's a 3-line poem where the first line has 5 syllables, the second has 7, and then the last has 5 again. Generally, it was, or originally, I'll say, it was intended to be mostly poetry about nature or that mm-hmm. kind of topic, but it has since expanded to almost anything. So haikus are a great example because you're restricting yourself to those parameters, right? So if you think about, now you can't be super wordy. You have to choose your syllables very carefully, not even just your words, the syllables. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to get to your point a little bit more quickly. And often my favorite haikus have some sort of, like, the last line's really going to hit the hardest, right? So you have 2 lines of setup and then you have 1 line to really drive home your point. That's not a lot of words mm-hmm. to convey an idea. So that's a huge restriction. So when you're going about writing a haiku and you're trying to fit everything into that little bit that you get, that's poetry. That's yeah. restriction. And that's what I associate writing poems with, is a lot of restriction.
Okay.
You might find, I mean, in poetry writing class, we talked a lot about just even restricting yourself, even if your form wasn't restricting. So you had a very open form, but restricting yourself within that form in order to help you think of new ways to get across your idea. So I think that's just something to keep in mind, where I see people restricting the way they have to write. I kind of usually jump to poetry really fast. So that's something to keep in mind, just how I'm talking about it too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any questions? Or should I get into, where do you want me to start? I have tips and tricks and I have terms. And I feel like I might want to start with the terms.
Yeah, let's just do terms first.
Okay, so I'm not going to overwhelm you with terms. And one of my tips, just spoilers, is don't get overwhelmed with terms. But here are some terms that you might want to know.
Okay.
Again, this is not school. You don't have to remember these words, and you can get way more specific in how these words and terms are defined. But broadly speaking, there's about 3 terms I really think you should know as you go to enter poetry. So the first one is meter.
Meter.
Okay. Yeah, meter. So meter is the rhythm of a poem.
Okay.
So if you think of a haiku again, the meter is 5-7-5. That's it.
Okay.
That's not scary, right? Meter sounds like a scary term, but it's not scary.
Okay.
It can mean a little bit more than just the syllables, but a good way to think about it is the syllables of the word. This also comes into play if you think back to, and please don't freak out when I say his name, but Shakespeare. You have a heavy meter, which every line in most of the sections of Shakespearean plays are written in what is called iambic pentameter. You don't need to remember that. That's just a fun little term.
What did you say?
I don't even know. But every line has 10 syllables.
Okay.
It's pentameter because 5 of them are called stressed syllables. So that's where you put your inflection on.
Okay.
You don't need to remember that. Nobody panic. There's no quiz at the end of this podcast. I promise. Unless you want one. Nobody wants one. That was a joke. So that's a meter. It's just syllables. Think about it as syllables.
So, like, I guess for me, that's what I really struggle with when I was reading the poetry, is like trying to figure out how the poet wants their poem read.
Yeah.
Like, I really struggled with that because, like, sometimes it's really obvious, but then other times I'm like, okay, like, I know I'm just trying to read this and try to, like, get through it, but I mm-hmm. also want to know, like, how they, like, wanted it to be said. Like, how would they read it out loud?
Yeah, so most people are thinking about, like, we talk in iambic pentameter a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of human nature to have that set up, and it's a little bit weird, funny, if you think about the implications of that, but I won't get into that. But I find if you're struggling with how to read it, reading it out loud can help.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're really struggling, I always go to stressed, unstressed, okay. Which means I put the inflection on one part of the word and then the next one I'm trying to not put the inflection on. And so it becomes a very rhythmic way to talk. So putting that stress on one syllable might help you feel like you kind of get the rhythm of it.
Okay.
I will say, if you're struggling at all, this is one of my tips, forget about it. Maybe it's not important. Maybe it's just not for you. Maybe it's just not a hit, mm-hmm. right? But that can be a way to help with the meter is to just read it out loud. Okay. And to put, just decide to read like this and see if that changes anything.
Okay.
Because it will start to maybe feel a little bit different.
Okay.
Okay, so the next term I want to talk about is rhyme scheme, which is not rhyme.
What?
So, yeah. So rhyme means you have two words that obviously have a rhyme. I think everyone knows what that means. But a rhyme scheme is whether or not a poem follows a consistent rhyming pattern. So there are certain patterns that certain poetic forms require. So if a poem has a rhyme in it, it doesn't necessarily mean it has a rhyme scheme. It might just be that the author felt like rhyming or whatnot. A rhyme scheme indicates that there's something very consistent that they're following. Yeah. If they're irregular rhymes, it's just rhyming. If it's regular rhyming, it's a rhyme scheme.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
You look confused.
Is there a way to dumb it down more? Or is that basically it?
Okay, so...
If not, I can just re...
If I'm talking in a long form paragraph and I just happen to rhyme, that's a good time. But that doesn't mean I'm having a rhyme scheme.
Okay.
But if I'm consistently rhyming and I have good timing, like, you know, I can't think of that many rhymes in a row.
But yeah.
If I'm consistently rhyming in a specific way, that's a rhyme scheme.
Okay, that makes sense. So yeah. Then you could like have a poem where it's changing rhyme schemes throughout the poem.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So you can think of like a limerick. A limerick has a rhyme scheme that you can write down and follow, and it's very clear where you're supposed to rhyme.
Okay.
But let's say in like Lang Leave, I haven't read that poetry book, but a lot of the poetry I read by her was not formatted to have consistent rhymes. There were obviously rhymes at time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even mean to that time. But that doesn't mean she was following a specific rhyme scheme.
Okay. And do you have to have rhyme scheme in a poem?
No.
Okay.
Rhyme and meter are just two ways to define a specific poetic form, but it does not encompass all poetic forms.
This is like making a light bulb go off in my head, because how many times have I been in school and they're like, what's the rhyme scheme? What's this? What's that? And I could have been like, not every poem has a rhyme scheme. Like, yeah. I'm so... Like mad, but like validated at the same time.
Feel validated in this, because not every poem is going to have a rhyme scheme, and that does not define poetry. So the other thing I want to say is form. So that's the last term I really want you to know. So this is the structure that gives shape to the poem.
Okay.
That's it. It can be defined loosely, as in there is no defining form, and that is the defining form, right? Mm-hmm. There's no structure, and that is the form.
Okay.
Or it can be very, very prescriptive. And that would be, you know, sonnets or limericks or haikus, where you are having a very specific kind of, you have rules that you need to follow to make it fit into that. And there are hundreds of types of poems. So I'm not going to mention all of the like different forms, but every poem has a form, even if the form is that it has no form. That's still a form.
Again, if you put that in school, they'd be like, you didn't try hard enough. Mm-hmm. You're saying those no form? That's not true.
Okay, so that brings me to something I'm going to jump to. And this is actually tip 7 that I have, but I'm going to jump to it because I feel like it's natural in the conversation. Which my tip 7 is know a little bit about form and structure.
Yeah.
It will help you. However, Marissa's masterclass has broken this down into 4 categories instead of hundreds.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have the poems that have meter and rhyme.
Okay.
So I'm going to name all of them and then we'll go into more depth. So we have the ones with meter and rhyme. We have those with meter and no rhyme scheme. When I say rhyme, I mean scheme, by the
way.
Okay. We have those with rhyme schemes and no meter. And we have those with no meter and no rhyme schemes.
Okay.
So you have 4 options and they all revolve around 2 definitions, which is rhyme scheme and meter.
Okay.
So if we think about those with meter and rhyme, so this means I am writing a specific amount of syllables. So that's your rhythm per line of your poem. And also there is some sort of consistent and repeated rhyme scheme happening.
Okay.
The most famous poetic form I can think of that follows this is a sonnet. Okay, so sonnets have, and you don't need to memorize this, again, there is no test, but sonnets have 14 lines and they follow a very specific rhyme scheme. And each line often has 10 syllables in it.
Okay.
So that's the meter and we have a rhyme scheme. There are a couple different types of sonnets and I don't want to get this really confusing, but the most famous one for me is called the Elizabethan sonnet, which is the one that Shakespeare wrote in.
Yeah. See, I was going to say, because like to me, when someone says a sonnet, I link that to Shakespeare.
Yes. And that's fair because he had a whole book of sonnets and he was, other than his plays, his sonnets, like he was famous for sonnets and plays.
Okay.
So that's very, very, that's a good example.
Okay.
And there's a lot of sonnets that I could probably read by Shakespeare that you would instantly get. It has a rhyme scheme. And we talk about rhyme schemes in terms of we use letters. So it goes A, B, A, B. So the first and third line rhyme and the second and fourth. And then we go C, D, C, D. So again, in the next stanza or paragraph, if you want to think about it that way, you have the same kind of rhyme, but they don't match the first paragraph. E, F, E, F. So again, you have the same thing. And then you have a couplet, which is just two lines. That's all. It's a fancy word for two lines.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those rhyme. So those are at the end. So you would have two rhyming lines at the end. And that is the structure of a sonnet. Congratulations, you now know what a sonnet is. It's not that scary.
I'm going to go out and write some sonnets.
Yeah, you go write some sonnets. We'll read them on the next podcast.
Okay.
So that's the most famous example I can think of for one with meter and rhyme. Now, there's meter and no rhyme. No rhyme scheme might have some rhymes in it, but that's coincidental. So this is blank verse poetry. Blank verse literally means that there is a meter, there is a rhythm of the poem, and there is no rhyme. So you can think of this, and again, please don't panic, everyone, but you can think of this as Shakespearean plays. They are all written in blank verse.
Okay.
That's that there's 10 syllables per line, and that's it. Okay. Sometimes he has rhyming, you know, couplets at the end of scenes or something to really drive the point home, but it's not always followed. It's not a rule he's following, so it's not considered a rhyme scheme.
Okay.
Okay, does that make sense? Those two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the third type is those with rhyme and no meters. So this means you can have as many syllables as you want in a line as long as each line rhymes with a different line.
Okay.
So this is limericks and one that you're going to be less familiar with, but it's villanelles. Villanelles also have no meter and a rhyme scheme. So if you think of this with limericks, you know, you're going to have, it goes A, A, B, B, A. So I'm going to read an example. There once was a poem from England acting like a poetic wingman. It was solid and stout and raucous throughout, though deep meaning was rarely to be had.
That gives nursery rhyme.
Yes. So a lot of nursery rhymes are limericks.
Okay.
So it's a very, limericks are supposed to be fun. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be a little bit sometimes saucy, sometimes a little bit dirty. Okay. So poems with rhyme and no meter, that makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So our final category is those with no meter and no rhyme. So this is a free for all. Not really, but there are a lot of poetic forms that don't have meter requirements and don't have rhyme requirements. A lot of contemporary forms of poetry tend to have this. It's a little bit more open-ended. It's a little bit freer. It can feel a little bit better to write, and you have fewer of those restrictions immediately placed on you. So those with no meter and no rhyme include prose poetry.
Okay.
Which is just when you have, I'm gonna really dumb it down. It's just a paragraph, but it's considered poetry.
I was going to ask you that because like the Langleve.
Langleve does do some prose poetry.
Like, it's like a mix of poetry and prose. So like I just didn't understand, like, is there a significant difference? But you saying it like that makes sense.
Yeah. So again, this is where the definition of poetry kind of comes into play. And personally, if you want to categorize something as poetry, I will treat it like poetry. That's my rule. So the fact that it's a piece of prose in a poetry book, I would read as prose poetry.
Okay.
So this is one of my favorite, that's one of my favorite ones to write, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love prose poetry. Sestinas are also no meter and no rhyme. Sestinas are really cool to get a little bit nerdy. It involves a structure where you repeat the last line, the last word of every line in a specific order throughout the poem, but there's no rhyme requirement or meter requirement. I think they're cool because they're very hard to write.
Yeah.
So we also have free verse, which literally just means it has no meter and no rhyme. And we also have like blackout erasure poems would be under this category as well, because it doesn't really fit anything else, right? Yeah. It doesn't, it's a different type of poetry.
It's really interesting. So like reading Kate Bear, she has this one poem and I can't remember if there was like any of the meters or the rhyming schemes or anything, but it's literally a questionnaire form.
Yep.
And it's like a question, but her poem like continues like as the answers of each question.
Oh, cool.
It's like very interesting. And I was like, this is poetry?
Yeah. So this is where I find poetry gets really cool, is when there's very specific restrictions that a poet places on themselves, but they're not necessarily ones you would think of.
Mm-hmm.
So sonnets are all fine and dandy to me. Like, I love a good sonnet, don't get me wrong. But that is really cool because she worked within the parameter of something, but mm-hmm. she did not work within the parameter of meter and rhyme.
Yeah, it's so very cool.
That's kind of how I would define form. Okay, so now, ready for my tops?
Yes.
Seven tips?
Yeah.
Okay, Marissa's tips and tricks to getting into poetry without it feeling like school. The first rule is this is not school.
You're a free child. Not only now.
Not only are you free, but you cannot be wrong.
Yeah.
If you completely, quote unquote, feel like you missed the point of a poem, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
This is no longer school. There's no longer a questionnaire. And while it is awesome to feel like you really got a poem, if you took something specific out of it, you got the poem. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Again, these are Marissa's rules. But I don't care if the author didn't intend that.
Mm-hmm.
You did something with their writing and you got something out of it. That's poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of people go into poetry wanting to figure it out when it's not always a puzzle. I think sometimes it's more of an introspection. It's getting what the poem means to you, and you cannot be wrong about that.
Okay.
Two, treat it like magic. Okay. Now, I'm going to get a little bit nerdy. If it doesn't hit you, you might be immune to it. In video games, sometimes when you're immune to magic, it just can't hit you.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a poem that is just not for you.
Mm-hmm.
You might not understand that feeling. You might not like that form, and you don't need to know exactly what it is. So sometimes it can just be not for you.
Yeah. And I noticed that.
Yeah.
That the poems that I like don't relate to at all, or like the background or whatever it is, I'm just like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And even like the one I read, I had like at the very end, there's a translator's note about kind of like just how like what the poetry is commenting on and stuff. And I was like, if I read this first,
yeah,
I would have had a better understanding of the majority.
Yeah, actually, let me add that as like a sub tip. If there is translation notes or author notes at the end, I hate when they put it at the end because mm-hmm. it should be put at the start. But try to actually look for those and read those first, because you can't spoil a poem personally, in my opinion. So you're just adding context.
Yeah.
And I like the context. Although sometimes I like to go in no context because I don't really want it to be about the author. I want it to be about me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also fair. But if you're feeling stressed about maybe quote unquote not understanding, that can be helpful. You can also try, just like my advice here is, if it's not hitting, just move on.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to hit, and you don't have to feel confident about your understanding of every poem to read a poetry book. You might come back later and it might change your life. You might come back later and it still doesn't hit, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You also might go on to the next poem and enjoy it. And that's like, why hold yourself off from that? Because you want to really understand something that maybe just isn't for you.
Mm-hmm.
Three, think about the feeling it evokes. So this is my favorite piece of advice, because if it makes you mad. So I've had friends who've read certain poems and they are like, I don't like it because I was frustrated. And I want you to acknowledge that feeling and ask, was that the point? Because sometimes, and we often think of poetry as this beautiful, like flowy, flowery format that just always sounds good and makes you feel good. But more and more often, especially with contemporary poetry, poetry is being written for the emotion. And one thing I know some of the poets that I've read have done is make it really hard to understand the poem, because that's the point they're trying to get across. Right. It's a frustrating feeling that they're feeling, so they want the reader to feel as frustrated.
So it's kind of like therapy. If you're having a feeling, why? And let's explore that.
Yeah. So
I like it.
Sometimes, like, I would just encourage people to lean into the feeling. So if you feel, this is also true. I remember reading a poem by Liz Howard, and I remember feeling nostalgic about it, which was weird because it was not a poem that connected me to childhood at all. But I felt really nostalgic about it, and I actually heard her talk about the poem, and she said she had written it for her grandfather, who had died around the time that she wrote that poem. And so she wrote it almost as a tribute to him. And the way she was describing her grandfather reminded me of my grandfather. And so I was like, that's so interesting that without knowing that context, I still felt that nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like sometimes we overanalyze too, and sometimes it's okay to just lean into it and go, I don't really know why I liked that poem, but it made me feel nostalgic, and that, like, that was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I read poetry to feel, so that's always the goal. Tip 4, let your mind wander. These are like opposite of what school tells you, which is my favorite thing. But if it pulls at something in your life, let it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's so powerful about poetry, is sometimes it is meant to connect us with the poet and the feelings that they're feeling. So with this poem that made me feel nostalgic and think of my grandpa, I did have that feeling of wanting to think about being at his farm when I was a young girl. And I remember kind of fighting that. And then when I found out the context, I was like, oh, I really should have just leaned into that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. I was reading a poem of Lang Leaves, or prose, I can't remember which one yet, but it was like reminded me of my wedding day, because she just like described like my love for my husband.
Yeah.
In like such a good way. And I was like, I wish I read this before my wedding, and like maybe I would have added it to her vows or something.
Yeah.
Like I was like, it was, this is so good.
Yeah. So that's what I mean too. And it's so powerful when it happens. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's one of my favorite feelings. So don't fight that. And speaking of don't fight, tip 5, don't fight yourself or the poem. So ask yourself why this goes back to why, if you feel frustrated, it might be the point, and really fully ask that question. If you really hate it, don't fight the poem.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you just are meant to hate that poem. Maybe the feelings it's evoking are not happy and you're subconsciously fighting that. Just move on. It's okay. Number 6, find poets. And this is kind of a weird one, but if you're having trouble getting into poetry, find poets that have similar backgrounds to you.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the best books of poetry I've read, where I just remember feeling so connected to it, is a book of poetry called The Laws of Falling Bodies by Kate Light. And the reason I loved this book so deeply was she was in an orchestra that did work for ballets. And so a lot of her things were about ballet.
Mm.
And even when they weren't about ballet, she was writing about it with that connection. And that spoke to me, obviously, because I could understand that. And so what I love about poetry is doing that. So if you're having trouble getting into a specific, or getting into poetry at all, I would recommend try to find a poet who has some sort of background. Maybe that means, you know, that they went to med school for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Maybe that means that they lived in Toronto and you lived in Toronto. Maybe that means that, you know, they came from an area near you. Those are more likely to be ones that you connect with. And so I think that that's something some people overlook, is they go to like the big poets.
Yeah.
Instead of going to poets that would probably be bigger for them.
Yeah.
And then my 7, I already talked about, know a little bit about structure and form. You don't have to memorize anything. This is not school. But just understanding that there's different types of form and structure can really help you enjoy a poem.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I now have a list of notable poets for those who are interested. But is there anything you want to add before I get into that?
I guess for me, like going back to your tip 6, like with the poets, Lang Leave, specifically I'm referencing, the poems that I really liked were the ones that, like, I've, you know, had similar experiences with, like you're saying. But there were, like, some stuff about, like, motherhood and things like that. And I'm like, maybe right now it's not for me, but I could see myself going back.
Yeah.
And, like, if in the future, if I'm in that season of my life, and, like, maybe that'll hit different.
Yeah. And I think that that goes back to a couple of the tips, too, of just, it might just not be for you yet. Like, you can always, if it's a poet you like, don't write it off forever. Maybe come back to it like 10 years from now. Like, it might mean something much more, much deeper for you when you've had more of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So some notable poets that I just think are worth mentioning. So Shakespeare, again, this is something that traumatizes a lot of people.
Yes.
I love Shakespeare. So this is something I'm very passionate about, is how much I hate how teachers teach Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think everything I've said, by the way, for poetry applies to trying to read a Shakespearean play.
Mm-hmm.
Is I think a lot of people get bogged down in the analysis. And I just think that that's maybe not the most important part on your first read. The most important part on your first read is trying to get the story.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can read several lines of Shakespeare and not really actually understand what's happening, but you get the feeling behind it. So if you're reading the words and you're going, wow, this is making me feel like sad or something, but I don't really know why. And then you analyze it, looking for evidence of why you feel sad. That can be a really great way to read Shakespeare.
Hmm.
Anyway, Shakespeare is one famous poet. Obviously, I think most people have heard of him. He helped popularize a specific type of blank verse poetry called iambic pentameter, as well as he was kind of the one of the forerunners of the sonnet at the time, specifically the Elizabethan sonnet, but he was very famous for that. So some of his famous works include Romeo and Juliet, Hamlet, Macbeth, those are plays, and Sonnet 17, which all of his sonnets are just numbers, so it's a little bit confusing, but that's the one that starts with, "Shall I compare thee to a summer's day?"
Oh, yeah.
Which I think everyone's heard that line before, whether they've heard the whole sonnet. Homer, not Simpson. I have to make that joke.
What? He's such a good boy.
Yes, like the ancient Greek Homer. So Homer popularized the epic poem, which is just a poem that tells the tale of a heroic act and adventure. His most famous work was the Iliad. There's more about Homer that I could get into, but I won't go that far.
How long is the Iliad? Like, what is, like, if it's an epic poem?
Epic poems are long.
Like, they're like a novel long?
They're like novels.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how long the Iliad is, but it's definitely not short. It is not, it is a multiple day poem, I feel like.
Okay.
So, Emily Dickinson is one that I would consider very notable. Also, side note, this is my list. There's hundreds of poets that have made a difference to poetry. These are just the ones that I think were really influential.
Yeah.
Emily Dickinson, so she was known for melancholic poetry that dealt with death and the afterlife. Dickinson is highly praised for her use of punctuation and how that changes the reading of the poem, specifically with dashes was her favorite thing to use, and her ability to describe abstract concept with concrete imagery.
Okay.
So one of her most famous poems or pieces of work is Hope is the Thing with Feathers, which I will not talk about at all because I will never move on from that if I say a word about that. But that really does encapsulate the abstract concepts with concrete images. Hope is the thing with feathers.
Well, it's just like, even me, I'm like, oh, I see what you're doing there, Emily.
Yeah. Also, just side note, I have to say it. She doesn't say bird. She says the thing with feathers. And I think that that is such a beautiful way to make it feel less concrete at the same time of bringing it concrete. Anyway, I love Dickinson. She's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvia Plath. So Plath popularized and advanced a specific type of poem called the confessional, which you can probably guess from the name means some sort of confession. It's usually brutally raw and honest. And that was kind of her style. So she often wrote with bleakness, categorized as raw, honest, and unflinching. She has a very famous novel, which is called The Bell Jar.
Heard of it.
Yeah, well, you heard of it because I mentioned it when we named the book jar, which was one of the inspirations behind the naming of the book jar.
Yeah.
She also has two other really famous poems. One is called Daddy, and the other is called Lady Lazarus. Daddy, in particular, is a very, very raw poem where she confesses a lot of things that may or may not have happened during her childhood at the hands of her father. And it is brutal. So it's a very interesting poem. We also have Sappho. This is another prolific poet from ancient Greece. So she was known for highly lyrical poems, which does feel like songs and would be songs. And she was credited for innovating writing poems through a first-person narration. At the time, most poems were written through the eyes of the gods. So she popularized that. And she refined the lyric meter. So her famous work, her most famous work is Sappho 31. I'm not going to go into that. But she was also where the term sapphic comes from, because she often wrote about love and desire between women.
Okay.
So she's super interesting, mm-hmm. if you have any interest in reading about that, as she lived a long time ago. So it's just really cool. But she is the reason why we call women-loving women relationships sapphic.
Interesting.
Which is just kind of a nice little note. And my last one is actually Shel Silverstein.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which I'm going to include because for a lot of people, this is actually going to be your introduction to poetry, yeah. whether or not you want to think about it that way, because you probably read him as a child.
Yeah.
Or are at least familiar with some of his works. He is best known for his light verse and quirky cartoons and poems that are accessible at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
His most famous work is Where the Sidewalk Ends.
Yeah.
If you read Shel Silverstein, I have news for you. You read poetry. If you liked Silverstein, I have news for you. You like a poet.
Look at us, guys.
Look at ya. All right. And then finally, just because I can't help myself, my favorite list of poets, Dickinson, Shakespeare, Plath, Kate Light, and Carson, and Sawako Nakayasu. Sawako Nakayasu wrote a whole book about ants, and the imagery of the ants is so fun.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a really fun poem, I wouldn't start there, but if you're maybe getting a little bit more into it and you feel like taking that on, I thought it was a really funny, fun, meaningful read. So definitely check that out.
Interesting. So
Robert Munch, yeah.
Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss.
All those fun little children authors that are
poets. You are reading poetry. You are reading poetry with a specific goal in mind, which is at a specific audience in mind, which is children.
Mm-hmm.
Munch in particular would be more about the storytelling side of things.
Right.
Dr. Seuss, you could go either way on. Some of them are storytelling. Some of them are more theme driven, I would say. All the places you'll go being one of them. So, yeah, if you've read these and not been intimidated, which you shouldn't be because they're children's books, and you're fine.
Step one, guys.
Step one.
You did it.
I think we overthink poetry a lot because we want it to be Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
But it ranges from Shakespeare to Silverstein. And it ranges from Sappho to Dr. Seuss. So I think if you're intimidated by poetry, but you've always kind of wanted to be able to read it, there are so many accessible poets to start with, and you can always ease yourself into it. Mm-hmm. With contemporary poetry as well, there are a lot, like I find contemporary poets that get popularized. So Rumi is one. They're not my fave, but they are a really good access point.
Yeah.
And if you do like reading that, try expanding beyond, because there's so much richness in the world of poetry. That, I'd encourage it.
Yeah, that's very, you know what? Good tips.
Thank you.
I liked it. So, and I like agree with a lot of those, because I was trying to think of like, if I had to tell someone how I got into poetry.
It was that you're friends with me?
Yeah. First that, but then continued in poetry.
Yes.
It is to find those things that you relate to specifically, and then not feeling ashamed that you don't understand what you're reading, and just...
Every single person, whether they will admit it to you or not, has read a poem and went, I don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
I find that hard to say myself, even though I'm saying you can do that. But it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, I've read poems where I just didn't get it. I've also read poems that I understood and just didn't like. Like, that's okay, too.
Yeah.
You're allowed to not like it. It's an art form. And just because you don't like one artist doesn't mean you won't like another. And it's the same with poetry.
I like it.
Any final thoughts?
I don't think so.
Did I cover it?
You covered quite a bit there. And perfect. I know for me, I said it already, it's very validating to just...
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like you just gave me permission to be like, it's okay, you don't know what you're reading.
Yeah, actually, if you take nothing else away from this, that's what I, Marissa, give you permission to not understand poetry and that not mean anything about your character. Yeah,
like you can still enjoy it.
You can still enjoy it. You can still try other things. You can hate Emily Dickinson.
Yep.
It will break my heart a little bit, but that's okay. And still like poetry.
Yeah.
You cannot get her poems and still like another poet. It's okay. You're still a poetry reader.
Mm-hmm. That is a good last line.
All right. Well, shall we draw our next topic?
Yes.
All right. What is your favorite autobiography and or memoir?
Okay.
I have a feeling this is going to be another one where I nerd out a little bit at the beginning of the definitions.
I like it. I like learning about it. So it'll be fun.
Good, because I like teaching about it, so I don't think I could stop even if you hated it. I would just feel more ashamed.
I'll just cut you off and be like, that's enough.
That's enough. We haven't had a lot of, I feel like we're getting a lot of nonfiction in a row.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you have been, we both wanted to read more nonfiction this year, so that's actually maybe a good thing.
Yes.
All right, what's up next for you to read?
Well, you know...
Well, you know, books.
Books be on the list.
Books, if you want to leave it at books, that's actually okay. Books.
Well, I am reading The 10,000 Doors of January by Alex for our book club. Yeah, so giving myself a couple weeks to read that. I'm going to be honest, a little bit of a slow start for me.
Okay.
But it is picking up and I am enjoying it. So very good. I'm excited to finish that. What about you?
Well, I have two books planned and one is almost finished. So that is A Crown of Swords by Robert Jordan, which is the 7th installment in the series, and I will be finishing it today or tomorrow.
Okay.
And the next one is 10,000 Doors of January because I have to read that for our book club. Yeah. I am very excited. Alex loves Alex Harrow.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing about that is she first picked up Alex Harrow because Alex Harrow spells her name the same way as Alex, which is with an I and not an E.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like the whole reason she started reading Alex Harrow, but does really love her. And so I'm excited to get that book underway because I'm excited to see.
It gives me like nostalgia for me.
Oh, that's cool.
Because like, again, just for people who might be curious about reading it, the first little bit was giving me like Secret Garden vibes. And like, I mean, it's been a long time since I read that book. So, but
I loved it.
I just like felt something with it. And then it's also kind of like the magical realism, historical fantasy. Like, it's just like very, I don't know. Like, it just
luscious.
Like, yeah. Like, it reminds me of stuff I've read when I was younger and like wanting to be like in your books, like in that fantasy world and like
just completely imagination. Enveloped.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's.
That makes me so excited.
It has
to
some
start
good
it.
Vibes to it, I will say.
Yeah, I'm kind of more pumped even than I was to start it. So that's amazing. All right. Well, any last and final thoughts, Megan?
I am a little wiser in poetry today because of you.
Aww, that's sweet. That's all I wanted. I hope everyone enjoyed that and it didn't feel at all like school. I hope it felt the opposite. I am happy to recommend any poetry books or answer any questions you have about it. Because, you know what, I want to talk about it more. So if you want to get that from me, feel free to join our Discord server. If you don't want to talk about poetry ever, that's okay too. Still join our Discord server. We have a lot of fun in there. And we do share it with our sister podcast, the Queens of Fantasy podcast, which is the podcast that I'm also in, reading The Wheel of Time. So you can definitely check out both there. That's also where you'll find our book club. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of all in one convenient and easy spot.
Yep.
Other than that, we have Instagram if you want to find us on there. So at the Book Jar Pod on there. Otherwise, I think the last thing I want to say is if you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us a review and or rating on wherever you're listening to this podcast. It really helps us get more listeners and grow our little reader community. And we do really want to do that. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much in advance. Otherwise, we thank you for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And well, I haven't come up with a better outro, so I guess it's keep on reading on.
Bye.
Bye.
favorite thing is when you do the little shuffling of the papers in the jar, mm-hmm. and Howie's head pops up. And he's like, what is that?
Really? Yeah, I didn't know that.
Every time he, like, I don't know if he doesn't like the sound of it or if he's not sure what it is.
I wonder if he thinks he's gonna get something, like a treat or something.
Maybe. Or maybe he's like, oh, they're ending their podcast.
He's like, thank God. Yeah. I can cough freely now.
Cough freely. I can go outside. I can do whatever I want now.
Which is funny because he immediately passed back out. So
yeah, I think he heard us continue talking and he was like, I still got a few more minutes.
He's like, I swear to God, guys, can you shut up?
Can you end it?
Well, I guess for Howie, we will.
We love you, Howie.